You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When Will Ferrell said he'd be my guest on Ruthie's Table 4, I expected some laughs, some great stories, but not happy birthday in Swedish.
You have to say hooray four times.
When I tell people that I'm doing a podcast with Will, their faces light up. Everyone seems to love him. When they remember working with him, or of course watching him on screen in those classic comedies, Elf and Anchorman, and many more. We do have a mutual friend, Saturday Night Live creator and producer Lorne Michaels, but we first met last spring when I was invited to a lunch. Now, walking into a lunch party late can be awkward. Conversations stop, chairs are adjusted, introductions made, but there I was, seated next to Will, and all was right with the world. He was here in London filming Barbie, and I was just off to New York, but we promised to continue the conversation.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Well, you're not allowed to go to the River Cafe anymore without me being there.
I know.
So frustrating.
We keep missing each other.
All right. Where are you, by the way? Are you in your house?
No, we're in one of the studios here in Hollywood.
Well, would you like to read? Do you have it there, the recipe for?
I do. So this is a recipe for white truffle tagliarini, not to be confused with tagliatelle, correct?
Correct. Finer noodle.
It serves four. And you need at least one 10-gram fresh white truffle. I guess you could have more. 250 grams of dried Italian-made tagliarini or fresh, rich egg pasta. Sea salt and freshly ground black pepper. And 20 grams of unsalted butter. So what you're going to do is you're going to clean the truffle. You don't want a dirty truffle, trust me.
No.
Brushing the surface to remove any sand that may be stuck in the crevices. You cool the tagliarini until al dente, okay?
I think you cook it rather than cool it.
Oh, yeah, you cook it. That makes no sense. See? I know, I'm like, okay, yeah. You cook.
Okay, that's fine.
You cook the tagliarini in boiling salted water until al dente. Now, in a pan large enough to hold the pasta, gently heat the butter until just soft, adding a pinch of nutmeg and black pepper and a few shavings of truffle. And now, after that, you add the pasta to the warm butter mixture and toss again and again to coat each strand. And then once you've done that, you place into hot plates and grate the truffle generously over each portion. Sounds good.
Easy.
Yeah.
So tell me, why did you choose this recipe of all the recipes?
I chose it because it seems relatively accomplishable. Doesn't seem too overwhelming. And I love a good truffle. I love that flavor. I love black pepper. Mm. And it's also just, it's very comforting. Yes.
It's comforting, yeah. And it's such a luxury, isn't
yeah.
it? I mean, the idea of having white truffles is very special. It's a very short season. You have it, can you get them? I guess you must be able to get them in California, of course. They must send them over from Italy. But did you live in Italy? Have you ever spent any time there where you would have white truffle tagliarini?
You know, I've worked there once, which was great.
What were you doing?
I was working on Zoolander 2. I was working there for 5 weeks, but I didn't have to work every day. It was kind of perfect. So I'd get some time off to go and explore and, you know, have a good meal. And
where were you? Were you
just
in Rome?
In Rome? Yeah.
Yeah.
And and that's such a luxury to get to do that. And it was up until that point I'd had a career of where you're always talking to everyone else who's gotten to film in exotic places. And the most exotic place I would get to film is, you know, the San Fernando Valley. And so finally, this was after decades, I was finally shooting a movie in Europe, and it was so much fun. It was great.
I did an interview with John McEnroe recently, and he was saying that when he was playing tennis, or when he was even performing in a band, there was no time to eat. You were just working. So, you know, you're being able to go
that's
to
usually,
Rome and explore.
Yeah, that's usually the case. A movie schedule's intense. There's long days, and you maybe have, you know, you're catching up on your rest on the weekend. So maybe you have one night a week and go. But this, I had enough time off to where I could kind of explore. But there was also a really fun group of actors who, Kristen Wiig was working at the time, and she would organize these fun dinner parties. And so that's another, when you can kind of combine great food with great company, there's nothing better.
Do you think about a location that you're going to be filming and wonder what the food will be like? Or?
No, it's. I always am envious of people who've been able to like write something specifically. You know, like Mike White, who did White Lotus, is a genius. His locations have been Hawaii. They've been, you know, the last one was
Sicily.
And then I think they're doing a third one, and it's going to be in some beautiful location in Southeast Asia. So he's a smart guy.
I know. Yeah. So going right back, tell me about your family. Tell about your mother and father and what meal times were like in your house.
Well, my folks divorced at an early age. So while my dad made a really good effort of still being involved, my brother and I pretty much grew up in a single parent household. Hmm. Of course, my mom had to work. And
what did she do?
She did a number of various jobs, from landscaper to, we used to call her a plant lady at one point, which meant she worked for a company that took care of plants in office buildings. So she'd go from office building to office building and maintain the plants. And she was kind of doing all these odd jobs while she finally figured out she needed to go back to school and get her master's degree, and later went on to have a great career in adult education, teaching English as a second language. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of remarkable to think about now, having been a parent myself, you know, being involved with my wife, and we've always been able to help each other, and we've always had help around the house. But to think of the idea of just doing it by yourself, and the fact that she always got home in time for dinner and made dinner. And she, both my folks are from North Carolina, so she was an amazing cook. Every night there would, you know, it's the reason why I like liver and onions. It's because my mom would cook it.
Did she make that?
Yeah, she would make this amazing liver and onions, where she'd kind of sear it and grill, and
would she cook the onions right down?
Yeah,
so and very soft onions.
But she'd just kind of, she'd just do it all by feel, and she would make, or she'd make great kind of stews in a crock pot, or she'd, one of her great things that we would request that didn't happen all the time were she'd make a fantastic fried chicken dinner with mashed potatoes that she did herself, and green beans, and sometimes would make homemade biscuits and things like that. So, and I look back at that, and my cooking skills are negligible at best. And and I was like, Mom, how did you do that? And she's like, you know, you just didn't think about it. And I was raised to learn how to cook. And I just wanted to make sure you guys at least had that one meal every night. And it was our time to kind of sit down and check in, which I'm sure is a common story you probably have heard, where you get to check in about how the day was and how your lives are going and et cetera.
When you think about what that memory for you of sitting down at the table and that she provided that and did that with, you know, and maybe also cooking was a great pleasure for her. Also, after I used to come home after work and start cooking, and everybody would say, "Relax, stop cooking." And actually, I found it quite. Do you find that sometimes just the thing of cooking is kind of
the times we're kind of find ourselves, I think, cooking a lot more in the summertime, and it really can be. I'm kind of more the sous chef to Vivica, to my wife. So I'm like, tell me what to do now. Okay.
With the onion chopper,
let me chop this. Okay. What do I do now? Watch that.
Yeah.
And you get in a rhythm and you put the baseball game on and you pour a glass of wine and it's really,
it's nice.
It's nice. Yeah. Yeah.
It matters. And when you would see your dad, would he cook for you? Would you go out to dinner?
Yeah. We'd kind of see our dad, and then dad started getting into cooking, and he loved kind of, you know, I feel like he was always grilling a breast of chicken. I feel like that was the main, there was a local market with like a really good butcher section, and he would get like sweet Italian sausages and make some pasta with sausages. And then of course there's the one infamous time where we were eating something and we're like, "Dad, what is this?" He's like, "Just try it." And he had cooked us rabbit. The only problem was he just didn't connect the dots that at that time my brother had a pet rabbit. And we were like, "Dad, why are you serving rabbit?" And I think he got mad at us for not trying the rabbit, but mad at himself for not thinking that would feel weird to us. But that was a that was an emotional evening.
And we had that in Tuscany this summer, because we always get rabbits for the little kids, and they have them in the cage. And then one night, you know, there was a rabbit, you know, and that wasn't too good. But do you think that he kind of wanted to cook, or do you think he wanted to show you that he was taking care of you as a parent, though he wasn't there?
I think it was both. I think he learned to enjoy it, and he became pretty good at it. And there was a stretch over the holidays. We still laugh about it today, and he would listen to the local cooking show on like AM radio on KABC out here in Los Angeles. And he was like, "You know what? I want to cook a Christmas goose."
At Christmas.
Yeah. At Christmas.
Yeah.
And he worked so hard, and it was just as tough as like leather.
Goose is challenging.
Really hard.
Yeah, it's very dry.
And he was so bummed out. We're like, "Dad, it's okay. It's okay. You tried your best. We'll just, we'll order a pizza." I don't know. Yeah. But
that's that sort of thing of cooking as a performance. Yeah. I feel that in the restaurant, because we have an open kitchen and I serve something, and then I always look to see the expression of somebody.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, when they're eating it. You know.
And I would think you are generally seeing a positive expression.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
I do.
Good.
It's quite nice when they say, you know, "Try this," and then you see them, you know, sharing it. And sometimes people send things back. No, they didn't like it. And that's fine.
Right.
You know, you just redo it or cook it differently or whatever. But there's a bit of a before. I always feel a bit sorry for somebody who's cooking for a dinner party and bringing it out, and they've been working all day trying to get it right.
Yeah. You know? No, my dad would get very perfectionistic about timing things out, and this has to go in at a certain time. And but I've seen, like, we spend our summers in Sweden. My wife was born there, and over the years we've always gone every summer, and we have a place out there that's way out in the middle of nowhere, along in this collective of little summer cottages next to her cousin.
Is it on the sea?
No, it's actually. Yeah, we're not. anywhere near the ocean. We're kind of in the woods, and we have a couple of beautiful lakes around us and that sort of thing. But it's, I know that pressure that my dad, because, and we tend to grill a lot, and the Swedes are all, the Swedes are annoyingly good at everything with, and they don't really try. Yeah. And they're good bakers, and my wife's cousins will come and, you know, that pressure of someone watching over your shoulder while you grill something.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, you might want to take that off. I'm like, really? Okay. And I always listen to them. And they'll just walk right up and go like, nope, I do 2 minutes longer. Okay, wow.
Oh.
And they don't use thermometers or timers or anything. And sure enough, every time I listen to them, delicious. It's delicious. And it was the right temperature and the right time.
I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think of what Swedes maybe kept. Can they do comedy? Are they funny? I think of Ingmar Bergman and all those kind of Swedish films.
They're not.
They weren't exactly a lot of
right,
laughs.
They're not considered culturally funny, but I think they're like
they're a little,
you know, sneaker upper type. They're very dry with their humor, very sarcastic, and they're very clever, and they love to tease in a very gentle way. And so I find them really kind of funny. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to lose my Swedish listeners, so you know.
right.
Stockholm. I've been to Stockholm, and we ate really, really well in Stockholm. There's a real food culture now in Sweden, you know, and they're all foraging, and it's a very foodie place.
We're always trying to. If we hear of a new restaurant, we'll go try to go a couple nights into the city and explore. There's an amazing hotel we've stayed at a couple of times called Et Hem, and their restaurant there is as good as any I've ever been. They have an excellent group of chefs there, and it's a very cozy place. It's like sitting in someone's living room.
Do you eat Swedish at home? Does Vivica cook Swedish
food? Funny because Swedes, for the most part, their day-to-day kind of menu or diet is fairly just continental. Yeah, and the only time you really eat specific, quote-unquote, Swedish food is usually around the holidays. So we always host a big Swedish Christmas party, which is called a Julfest. And we have found this lovely couple, Mark and Lena, who have a restaurant out here in L.A. called Open Face, which is all these types of open face sandwiches. And it's a small kind of pop-up place. But the main part of their business is catering, and she's Danish, I believe, but we found her years ago, and she knows how to cook all the Swedish food. So that's our big night where you have all the herrings, and they cook a ham and Swedish meatballs with the lingonberries and all the cheeses and the kanekki bread. And so that's like our big night to have Swedish food. And we invite, it's a party for 80 people. So all of our friends, we've been doing it for over a decade now, and everyone, in fact, there was one year we couldn't do it. I think we were out of town, and people were upset and thought we'd left them off the list. So created quite an outrage. But no, that's our big night to eat Swedish food. And then the other big kind of Swedish meal is what's called a kräftskiva, which is in August, and that's when you eat crayfish. And that's really fun to, you know, you just boil all these crayfish with the cheese. And of course, it's all done with aquavit and songs. And
Well, sing me a Swedish song.
I can sing you Happy Birthday in Swedish.
Okay.
Ja mor har leva, ja mor har leva, ja mor har leva, inte hudra te hår. Jag viska haleva, jag viska haleva, jag viska haleva, inte hur trötte ho. Hurra, 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 hurra. You have to say hooray 4 times.
I never expected to have a different tune.
Yeah.
I thought that sounds like a kind of marching song almost, right?
And it's the funniest lyrics in English. It's like, I hope you live, I hope you live, I hope you live for 100 years. But if you don't, we'll still drink to you. It's something like that, yeah. So it's this very... The Swedes are so funny with how they accept life and death. It's just like, I hope you live, but if you don't worry, we'll still think of you.
But if you don't, you'll be okay.
Yeah, you'll be okay.
We'll think of you. All right. But on your birthday, it's your birthday, but let's just, you know, maybe it's not going to be forever.
And so it could be, but maybe it's not. But anyway, the point is we're here and let's have a drink. Yeah.
Good Swedish accent. Did you know the River Cafe has a shop? It's full of our favorite foods and designs. We have cookbooks, linen napkins, kitchenware, tote bags with our signatures, glasses from Venice, chocolates from Turin. You can find us right next door to the River Cafe in London or online at shoptherivercafe.co.uk. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With summer fast approaching, life tends to get busy. Seeing family, friends, hosting dinners, barbecues, picnics in the park, and everything else that comes between. What's also important is that we find time for ourselves to rest and recharge. Therapy can be a vital tool to assist you with boundaries and managing your schedule in a way that helps you stay happy and healthy. If you're looking to find a new therapist or start therapy for the first time, BetterHelp is worth a try. It's entirely online, which makes it easy, accessible, and flexible with your schedule. Completing a short questionnaire will match you to the right licensed therapist for you. If it's not working, you can change for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Ruthie today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ruthie.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
When you left your home and you had all those meals together with your brother and your mother and then your father, and then did you go to college? Did you eat out or did you eat in the dorm?
Yeah, I think...
Was it a rude awakening?
No, it was pretty good dorm food. I was just happy to have 3 square meals. But probably not my freshman or sophomore. As I moved out of the dorms into more of an apartment situation, that's where it was a little more bleak.
That's when it changes.
Yeah.
And was that in college?
Yeah,
or
that was in college.
When you went to...
And then later after college, you know, those are some pathetic moments in my food life where I was like, you know, the struggling actor and I'm working a desk job that doesn't pay a lot, where I literally have $20 that has to last me the rest of the week. I remember my roommate at the time, who had a better job and a little more money, I was literally sitting down. I think my dinner one night was pasta with, and the only thing I had was some mustard. And I put the mustard on.
That is a far cry from pasta with white truffles.
And my friend Jerry was like, "You can borrow some of my tomato sauce." I'm like, "Oh no, I prefer the mustard."
Yeah.
But anyway.
And then you went to New York. Did you move to New York?
Moved to New York when I was hired for Saturday Night Live and...
I know. I told Lorne that we were doing this, and he was usual Lorne self, saying how much he loved you.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's such a... You spend so much time in that studio and in those offices and at that show, you're not really sitting down in your apartment for a meal. But that was getting to kind of go to some of these New York restaurants. That was 7 years of getting to explore... in fact, there was a great place down in the Village on Commerce and Barrow, and I don't think it's there anymore. It was called Grange Hall, and we had so many meals there where my folks would fly in that week to come see the show. And we'd go, like, on a Thursday night to go eat at Grange Hall. And it was, like, the amazing, very cozy, neighborhoody place where I just remember always ordering the hanger steak, which was, like, cooked really well and great atmosphere. And just a very, I was like, oh, this is the typical New York place, which Lauren would always point out. It's funny. He made a great observation. He was like, you can tell, like, restaurants, it's all about lighting. And I was like, you're right.
Yeah.
If the lighting works, yeah, it's inviting and you want to sit down. And,
yeah.
And I also had a really funny meal once with Lauren at Pastis, at the old Pastis.
Oh, yeah. Before Keith McDowell, yeah, in 13th and, Street. Yeah.
Where Lauren kept saying that Mick Jagger may stop by. And I was like, uh-huh, yeah, sure. And the meal was almost done. And then all of a sudden Lauren was like, oh, he's here. And then we were both, I don't see Lauren get nervous very much. And then we both were incredibly nervous. And he was like, will you sit there? Wait, no, hold on. I'll have him sit here. And then you sit across from here. And then, okay. Hello, Mick. Hi. And then, and there I was, you know, sitting next to Mick. I didn't contribute to the conversation at all because I just sat there. But Mick Jagger couldn't have been nicer to me and kept pulling me in and everything like that. But I was too scared to say anything. Yeah.
He was in the restaurant a year or two ago and he said, Ruthie, how are you? And I said, I am so excited because David Letterman is here. And then I realized that was not the thing you say to Mick Jagger. But I was really excited that David, he's a good guy. He's a nice person.
That's so funny.
Do you think that getting to eat in good restaurants almost was a measure of your success when you were able to go to a good restaurant or be taken to a good restaurant?
Yeah, I think to some extent. I mean, definitely. You're definitely all of a sudden in this new category. And Lauren, part of the ritual and the schedule of the show is his big Tuesday night dinners where he has the host and he invites members of the cast. So that would either be at Orso or La Tanzi or occasionally Joe Allen's and all these kind of venerable New York restaurants. And that was really eye-opening to be, you kind of felt like, you know, country mouse in the big city all of a sudden. That having been said, I wouldn't say we grew up, you know, we were very, very much lower middle class. We didn't have a lot. They still would splurge on occasion and take us to the interesting restaurant that had just opened up, you know, where we lived. And so they still gave us an appreciation for, I wouldn't say fine dining, but like what is kind of different in terms of culinary experiences and force us to try different types of foods and this, that, and the other. So I definitely had a little bit of that in my kind of dining background.
Did you ever work in a restaurant? Were you ever a waiter?
I never did. Mm. I avoided that because I knew I would be fired immediately. I'm not a great multitasker.
Why would they fire you? Carrying plates or?
I would have been the one that, how many tables does a waiter usually handle? What, 4 to 5 tables?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe
even,
more?
Maybe. Yeah. No, we don't like to have. We share it around, so every waiter has a section, which is about 3 or 4 tables.
Yeah.
And then everybody helps. You know, we all, you know, you see managers changing the tablecloth and stuff.
Right.
Everybody does everything.
So you guys have a real team effort. But, you know, if I would watch waiters and I'd be like, I could never keep track of everything.
Yeah,
I'd need a long, I'd need a long grace period. I would eventually get it down. So I knew that wasn't an area that would be a strong suit for me.
It's a really hard job. You know, you send food out. And the way all these young, you know, sometimes I get impatient at somebody on the grill and say, where is that sea bass? Where is that? And I thought, you know, when I was their age, I couldn't cross the street, you know, and they're they're amazing the way they can, you know, send out the food and the mozzarella and,
I forget
and take it.
When waiters just memorize it, the order, and they don't write it down.
I'm we write everything down.
Okay, because when you go to a restaurant and the waiter's like, yes, go ahead. And I'm like, I get stressed out for them.
Yeah, but you memorize lines, right? You can do that or not?
Yeah. Yeah, so? you obviously, so maybe that's a muscle you develop if you're,
You would be good probably is you could be really nice to people. I think you can get away with a hell of a lot, you know, if you are kind of nice, if you're not going to get annoyed with people, then if you basically like people, then it's okay, you know.
Well, some of the jobs I worked in, I did survive with charm.
Charm.
And with confronting my mistakes in such an open way that it was almost disarming.
Yeah.
And when they said, you never finished this one thing, and I would say, you are absolutely right.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. When I worked as a waitress one summer, and I promise you, my last day there, I'd worked there for 2 months, I was still telling people it was my first day. I used to say, I'm really sorry I forgot that, but I just started this morning, you know.
Yeah.
And so if you get people on your side, you walk into that room and you're serving people. It's like an audience, you know.
Bartending's the one thing I thought maybe I could handle because it's all kind of right there in front of you.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe I could do that. But anyway, I somehow avoided
But you like going, you come to the River Cafe and you like going out. Have your kids ever worked? Have they worked yet in a restaurant?
They haven't. They should. Yeah, that would be a nice wake-up call.
It's not a bad it's not a bad job for kids because it's so collaborative, you know. I always say if you do something, if you don't do your job, then it's not your boss that gets upset. It's your, you know, the person who's depending on the carpet being swept or the parsley being chopped. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad idea.
If you like listening to Ruthie's Table 4, would you please make sure to rate and review the podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Should I ask you your favorite food scene in a movie that you've been in? Is there one?
The one that's kind of sweet that I'm asked about the most probably is eating the spaghetti and maple syrup and in Elf. Because that we didn't really plan out what they just put a bunch of stuff in front of me and I just kind of improvised that and then ate as much as I could. And so hundreds of kids every year ask me, what does that taste like? That's the one that stands out probably the most.
Great movie. Yeah. Great scene. What are you working on now? What's happening now?
Still kind of on a holding pattern.
Is that with the strike, after the strike?
Yeah, because the SAG strike.
Did you eat more when the strike was going on? did you have time to be at home cooking?
Oh, yeah. We were just out last night at an amazing place in L.A. called the Japan House, which is two chefs who were formerly the chefs for the Japanese ambassador to the U.S. And they've started this restaurant, and it's Yeah, really extraordinary. But yeah, I've been at home more and, kind of waiting for the next thing to kind of, happen.
When did you start cooking? When did you actually cook, or don't you really cook?
I can't lie and say that I'm
That's okay.
really cook that much.
Your boys? Three boys, do they cook?
The boys, our oldest is a sophomore in college, so I think he'll cook a little bit. It's really our middle son who is the big foodie of the three. He really will love to get in there, and he's like, "Dad, should I make smash burgers?" I'm like, "Do it." And
smash burger?
Yeah, that's where you take the patty and you smash it down on the skillet.
Mm.
Yeah. And then you don't leave it on too long, and then you flip it and smash it. So they're really kind of thin, and kind of you have a nice char on the outside, and then but he's the one who's like, if we are traveling, he'll look up like restaurants we should go to, and he just loves all those experiences and through food, and he'll just occasionally, I think he also finds it really comforting. Our youngest boy likes it. He's like, "Mom, should we bake a cake?"
Yeah.
Let's do it. Yeah. And they'll just want to spend a couple hours, doing something like that.
I think you should just demand that your next movie is made in London. We can sit in the River Cafe garden, or we can take a walk, or we can have food at home, or we can talk
about
Ed. Maybe I'll see you in New York. So the last question, and thanks so much for taking so much time, is if you had a food that you would go to for comfort, was it the liver and onions your mother made, or is it something that you cook, or a Swedish birthday celebration cake? What would be your comfort food?
Oh, it's such a good question. Yeah, I mean, we've touched on some of them, but the other one that pops to my mind is, I guess it's connected to, we have a chicken coop at our house, and there's nothing more satisfying than going and getting the fresh eggs. Uh-huh. And I don't know if scrambling up eggs is the hardest thing to do from a cooking standpoint, probably not. But it is, that's one of those connective moments of when, if one of my boys, we have to get him up early on the weekend because they got a soccer game or a basketball game, that to go ahead and grab some of those eggs and just kind of gently scramble them and maybe put a little Parmesan cheese on the top and toast a couple pieces of bread and just sit and kind of talk as we have breakfast. That's very special to me. And so I love the connection of all of that together.
Mm, food and love. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And I hope that we can see each other soon. Yeah, somewhere, London, New York.
That would be great.
Yeah?
I would love it, Ruthie.
Okay,
thanks so much.
Come home. We miss you. Sean and I are here. So Will Ferrell chose, for his recipe, tagliarini with butter and white truffles.
I mean, it's such a luxury ingredient, really. All the chefs get really excited when the truffle season begins and you slice your first truffle and smell it and they're like, "Oh my God, that's amazing." When a lot of people are having truffles in the River Cafe and the air is filled with the smell, it's really intoxicating. People feel like people may be getting high on the smell.
There's also there's a choosing them as well when you have that, they bring in the white truffles and we sit at the table and you look at them for their shape and their firmness and how many holes there are and where the cracks are and how they will be to clean and how they will be to shave. But it is that sort of smell. We always just sort of worry that maybe they put truffle oil in the box or something to make sure that they could smell that strong. But that's why we're really careful who we buy them from.
Because it's such a sort of high-value ingredient. Mm. It's open to people. And when I was a younger chef, maybe not quite so much now, but people used to bring them around London in their sort of wheelie cases. Mm. And then two dodgy guys would arrive at a back door of a restaurant and ask if you wanted to see what's in their suitcase. And you'd be like, what are we letting ourselves in for? And then you'd have to sift through, you know, we had one man that turned up with something that literally, I think, was a potato filled with truffle oil. And we were like, we can't buy that.
I think the other thing about truffle is that because it's such a luxury, it's so expensive, it's so, you're careful. People try to be very, very careful. You measure, you sell it by the gram. So you sell, you know, 2 grams or 5 grams or 10 grams. And then there's, you know, you have to weigh them. We weigh them when we get them. We weigh them after service. We make sure that we have it. But on the other hand, when you're actually doing it, you just want to give more and more and more, don't you? I'm really the worst person because that thing of having to judge it. Do you judge it or do you weigh it when you've
done it? I freestyle, actually. Hmm. I shouldn't really say that. I never undercut people.
No.
But I always probably go a bit over. But it's the only time you see a little tiny scales on the pass. Hmm. What's that for? I got one of the biggest bollockings of my career when I was a young chef. God, I thought I was going to get sacked. Literally, I got taken to the chef's office and I was literally like torn down the strip. Oh, but it was really like, because often you wrap the truffle in a tissue, don't you, to stop it from getting whatever. And he left the truffle in the tissue on the front pass. And so I was obviously cleaning down with soapy water and he was like, where's the truffle? And I was like, oh my God. I haven't seen it. And then I realised I looked on the floor where all the water and all the guys were cleaning the floor and someone had trotted on it in the water.
It's really cool that Will Ferrell chose that, you know, living in California. And but he just said that he just loved those white truffles.
Ruthie's Table 4 is produced by Atomai Studios for iHeartRadio. It's hosted by Ruthie Rogers and it's produced by Willa Malinsky. This episode was edited by Julia Johnson and mixed by Nigel Appleton. Our executive producers are Faye Stewart and Zad Rogers. Our production manager is Caitlin Paramore and our production coordinator is Bella Cellini. This episode had additional contributions by Sean Wynne Owen. Thank you to everyone at the River Cafe for your help in making this episode.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.